We are excited to be sponsored by Whitebook. Teachers, are you looking for a cost-effective whiteboard solution for distance learning and in your classroom? These specially coated sheets of dry erase paper are not only amazing for solving math problems, creating anchor charts, and writing schedules, but they also allow you to save and share your work easily. Marie, you've been using some of their whiteboards in your classroom. What do you think?
Yeah, this is a tool that I didn't even know I wanted or needed in my classroom, but it's been awesome. I've been using the flip chart and it's replaced my chart paper. What's great is I can put my anchor charts on them or daily schedule. And when I'm done with it, I can just erase it and use it again.
Thanks again to Whitebook for sending us some cool products to check out. Right now, Teachers Talking Tech listeners can get 30% off and help support our podcast by going to whitebook.com/teacherstalkingtech. That's WIPEBOOK.com/teacherstalkingtech. Hello and welcome to Teachers Talking Tech. This is Eric Robinson, and today we have a bonus Thanksgiving episode. I really want to take this opportunity to thank all of you who are listening to the podcast. You are the reason that we do it, and I know that I'm speaking for Mike and Marie when I say we truly, truly appreciate the fact that you listen to the podcast and the positive feedback that we have received from everyone. It really means a lot to us, and that's why we do it. So today's episode, I talked to Dr. Liz Kolb. She's been on the podcast before, and she just has great insight into not only the realm of teaching and technology, but just education as a whole. And, you know, so we talk about distance learning, hybrid learning, and then we also talk about how this whole period of teaching and learning during the pandemic, how that's going to affect the future of education. Because even if things kind of go back to this new normal, whatever that is, things will be different. So great conversation with Dr. Kolb. I hope you enjoy it as much as I did. Well, welcome to one of our favorite guests, Dr. Liz Kolb. Welcome to the show.
Yay, thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Well, for those of you who are not familiar, Dr. Kolb is a professor at the University of Michigan, and her latest book is called Learning First, Technology Second, The Educator's Guide to Designing Authentic Lessons. So you should definitely check that out. It's a wonderful book. I wanted to have you here with us today, Liz, because I feel like you have a really good finger on the pulse of a lot of the different things going on with the pandemic, distance learning, hybrid, all these different things. We're teachers right now, we're in the thick of it, right? We're trying to just, you know, tread water. Parents, same thing. And lawmakers, I wish I could say that they really knew what was going on, but I think we kind of know the real score there. So I really wanted to get your take on some things. And so there was an article I read, which was kind of the jumping off point for some of the discussions that I wanted to have with you today. And so this New York Times article, it talked about some of the huge changes occurring because of distance learning. And they didn't really try to like read the tea leaves and talk about what might happen in the future, but they kind of more just talked about what's happening in the present. And then you're kind of supposed to be left with, well, maybe some of these things will keep on going, you know, forever. And we can have those, some of these things we've learned. But I saw this in your Twitter feed, and I think this is such an appropriate quote for this discussion, which is that John Dewey, right, says, we do not learn from experience, we learn from reflecting on experience. And so I think that as we kind of go through these things, reflecting on what has gone well and what hasn't, instead of just saying, we learned so much, let's do all of this.
Absolutely. I love John Dewey. So I quote him all the time. He was just such a forward thinker when it came to education and really right on the money. But yeah, I think this is a great time to reflect. We're, 8 months into the pandemic and about, you know, 2 or 3 months into actually, you know, well thought out pedagogy around remote learning and hybrid and high flex. And so it is an opportunity to take a pause and really think about what we've learned as educators trying to work through the pandemic and provide an education to our students.
So the first thing in this article, the first point they made was that they feel like innovation will be endless, right? So because of the flexibility that we've all shown during this pandemic, that these innovative practices are just going to be a stepping stone, right? So the things that we've done in the past, we won't be afraid to innovate any longer. Like, for example, they were talking about, virtual team teaching. They're talking about focusing on mental health as well. So some good things that could be brought out of this. So I guess my question for you is, there have been some innovations with this. What would you say, what's one innovation that you've noticed come out of this that you think has been valuable?
Well, one of the things that I think has become valuable is that the general population of educators are now seeing that good teaching and learning can happen virtually and through virtual tools like the Zoom rooms and the Google Classrooms, if it's done in a very thoughtful way. And so I do think it's opened up educators to being more willing to use these tools and to integrate them into their classrooms, even if they're back full-time face-to-face. So I think that that's been a benefit, because in my particular field, we do tend to get a large section of educators that just kind of go, oh, I don't use technology, or I don't need technology, virtual learning isn't as robust, or it's not as rigorous as what we do in the classroom. And there's some truths to that, depending on what you're doing, but it can be robust and rigorous if it's done in a very careful and mindful way. And I think that as the educators are moving through using these tools and getting more comfortable with them, they are becoming very creative and they are seeing some benefits in the tools themselves. So I think that that is a positive that has forced educators to at least try these tools and to see the possibilities.
Yeah. What's the saying that necessity is the mother of invention? Right.
Very true.
And I saw so many memes come up when this all started, where teachers, that are like technology teachers or instructors saying like, you wish you would have listened to me in that last staff meeting when I was talking about all these technology tools now that we have to use them. And I think that being immersed into technology has really forced teachers to look at how they use technology in the classroom and kind of make the point that you can't just put your head in the sand. Like, technology is here, it's here to stay. There's going to be more of it in the future, and at least to be aware of it. And I do hope that innovation with mental health and how we treat mental health in students and faculty, community members, all those things are looked at after this. I really do hope that will continue. The one thing I worry about is sometimes with innovation, you have a lot of lost leaders, right? Like, there's a lot of people going in different directions saying, hey, you should be doing this every day, you should be doing that. And I worry that some of the things that we had been innovative on, I just worry that some of that will get lost in some of the tools.
You know, what's interesting, that one thing I noticed, and you may notice this too, when the pandemic started, was we really went into this very tool-centric focus, and it became throwing lots of tools at teachers. You know, here's spreadsheets and spreadsheets of tools, and companies are making things free for a certain amount of time. And it was this kind of grab bag of tools, but there was almost no talk about pedagogy or instructional strategies with the tools, which is anti-teaching in many ways. It's not really what we should be doing with technology. And I had a very kind of visceral reaction to that. And I think we're starting to come back around to recognizing that we should use fewer tools and focus on pedagogy. But I agree. I feel like that innovation got mixed up with this idea of innovation means using 500 different tools with your students and being super creative with technology. And in doing so, we lose the reminders that we should be differentiating and learning. And we forget that we should be, personalizing learning, because we're so focused on just using all these tools.
Well, the second thing that they talked about, the heading of this one was, it won't matter where you live. And I think this is the idea they're trying to bring up in the article, that even if you are, you know, in a small town or wherever you are, that you can access education. They gave an example of a rural district that had gone through a natural disaster and then used that as a way to build infrastructure. So now students, when this pandemic started, they already had the hotspots and all those things built up, which was really interesting. But this brought up a lot of digital equity issues for me, because I think this idea that everyone's connected now and everyone's on the internet and we all have access to the internet. I mean, I think that, and I don't know the numbers, but this cannot be, I mean, even here in where I live in Michigan, only 60% of our students have reliable access to high-speed internet. And so I don't know, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, all of what you said. You know, we're looking at the wrong statistics in many ways. We keep looking at, well, who has connection? A lot of, yes, you know, 90 some percent have connection, but are you underconnected? Is it intermittent connection? Is it connection only when you can afford it, right? Month by month? Is it connection when, you know, you are able to get your hotspot to work on more than one device? There's just a lot of issues around looking just at connection and connectivity. We've definitely found from studies that there's a lot of underconnectedness happening, meaning that you can only use, you know, one device with the internet at a time, or that, you know, families are month by month as far as their connectivity. So I think that's a real fallacy that's out there, that, you know, we're better connected now. I think that's a goal. And one of the things that I actually appreciate about the pandemic, a silver lining, is that it's brought this issue of equity and access to the surface around digital tools. It's always been there, you know, as we've known, but now more people are aware of it than before. And even our lawmakers are looking more seriously at issues of digital access as a civil right. But I don't feel like it's, you know, equity is not just having access to the technology, as you know, or the infrastructure, right? It's not just having the Wi-Fi or the broadband and the device. It's also having the know-how. It's having the time, right? Just because you're home, you may be helping out your parents. You may be helping out siblings. You may not really have the time to connect. So there's a lot of issues, other than just actually having the physical devices. So, we're far from where we should be with that.
Yeah. And, you know, it's been interesting to see the issues that have come up, because it's not just, like you said, it's not just intermittent connectivity. It could be that you have pretty good Wi-Fi, but you have four siblings, right? And it's all these little things that have come up, and it's not as simple as just parking a bus somewhere and having people drive and get on the internet. And I really do hope that it shined a light on the fact that the internet is just, it needs to be a basic right and a basic service at this point. It can't be thought of as this add-on like cable or something like that, right?
Yeah. Yeah, for educational opportunity in this world, you need to have full access. You do. And it, you know, I'm a firm believer that it should be a right for our students to all have full and equitable access. And it is interesting as well, when we kind of think about access and technology, you know, for example, a lot of school districts are not recording their synchronous time for FERPA reasons and other, would make sense. But if you miss a few days of the synchronous time, it's not easy to make up that time like it is in the classroom, where a teacher can pull a student in during recess and work with the student. I even noticed my son missed one day, and the Google slides were just a bunch of pictures that we got. So we really have no idea. We couldn't figure out what the content was that he missed. If you do have intermittent connection and you can only connect a few days a week and you're missing the synchronous time, you could be missing a ton of new content. And that's concerning too.
Yeah, great point. And I think this that kind of takes us right into the next part of this article, which was talking about how school has turned into something that could be thought of as much smaller, right? So it could be because of these micro schools. It could be homeschooling, learning pods, all these different ways that parents, either they were not happy with online learning in their district, or they were, you know, scared that their kids were going to get exposed to the virus. For one way or, you know, one reason or another, a lot of that has popped up. And, you know, I think, like you were just saying, I think it's great that parents have become more in, you know, invested, if they can, in their students, you know, in their kids' learning. But that doesn't mean that every parent can do that. And that brings me right into these learning pods. So there's got to be issues with equity, right? This, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm not a fan of the learning pods because of the equity issues around it. Especially if you are part of the public school system and, you know, you create a small pod and you hire a teacher and, families are paying a lot of money to hire teachers to come in and teach these pods. Then what's happening is the children go back to school next year or a few months from now, and they're probably, you know, on target, if there is such a thing, or far ahead of some of the children that didn't have these benefits. And so then the teacher is going to have to struggle with these huge gaps that they have in the classroom when they come back. So now they're going to have the pressure to challenge the students that are much further ahead because of the learning pods, and then also try to catch up the students that didn't have this benefit. And so it just makes it 10 times harder for the teacher. Whereas if they were all kind of more in the same space, it would be a lot easier for the teacher so that they don't have to differentiate so much in their teaching. So there's a lot of equity issues that come about when families are choosing to create these pods. And one of the things that we don't emphasize enough is there's no such thing as behind. It's kind of an arbitrary thing in education, right? Like, we can set the goal line. And so this year, the goal line is different for most teachers. You know, it's not as far as it used to be. And so parents who are very concerned about their children falling behind probably don't have to worry about that at all, because the teachers, when they get back in the classroom, will make sure that they are where they need to be. And so I think that that's kind of an unnecessary panic that's creating a lot of these learning pods.
But I think that privilege kind of is, you know, and it's not even as simple as just you're wealthy and you can afford it. But I think this notion that in your mind, your kids, you have the privilege to say they shouldn't even have to go through what other kids are going through, right? Like, they shouldn't have to put up with digital learning, and they shouldn't have to fall behind, quote unquote. And listen, I get it. Like, I'm a parent. And there's a lot of parenting that it's not, you know, study-based, right? It's not research-based. It's based on emotion and gut feelings. And, you know, in the end, they're saying, I know what those parents would say is just, listen, I'm doing what's right for my kid. But in the bigger picture, you know, in the bigger picture, that's what we're talking about, is just what that has as an effect on schooling in general, right?
Yeah. Well, and Eric, you bring such a good point, because public schools, the history of public schools in America, public schools are created for the public good. It's not about an individual person, although, you know, that's how many people look at it. It really is about, if we elevate the education for all the children, then we're going to elevate society. And so having a spectrum of children in the public schools is so important. Because it's important to have high income, low income, and everything in between. And, you know, this kind of puts me on my own rant, but as parents, I'm definitely a parent of privilege. And I hear a lot of friends and neighbors, you know, worrying about their children's mental health, and that's the reason they give why, you know, they're going to still have their children participate in things that they're not really supposed to be doing because of COVID. And it's a lot of, well, you know, we all make our own choices during COVID. But the truth is, you know, with COVID happening, it's been very clear from the doctors that this is a public health issue. So yes, we all want our children to be able to, you know, whatever, go trick-or-treating, or we all want to gather with our families for Thanksgiving, or we want to go and eat inside a restaurant. But it's been clear to us that when we do those things, even if we are low risk for having complications for COVID, we're keeping the levels elevated in society for the vulnerable people, for the elderly, for, you know, our greatest generation who sacrificed for us. And so the public good is don't do those things, even though you could, to sacrifice. And I feel like these are small sacrifices we're making compared to, you know, the World War II generation, compared to people who are really living in traumatic situations. Asking children to stay home remotely, especially for privileged parents, it's an inconvenience, yes. Will their children be absolutely fine at the end academically? Probably. So, you know, I think that we need to get out of the mindset about ourselves and our kids and look at it through the lens of it's about a public good for all the kids, the vulnerable kids, the low income students as well, and think about it as contributing to the public good. So I know that was kind of a long rant, but I think that education, I think, you know, the privilege issue is a big issue during COVID, and it's not about your individual kid. It really needs to be about the public good.
Well said, well said. All right, so here's the last one that I picked from this article, which was talking about how colleges will now consider the full picture, right? So instead of just looking at test scores and things like that, the colleges are now going to look at more than that. And what kind of spurred this on is that, according to them, more than 500 colleges nationwide have adopted test optional policies because ACT, SAT, many of those tests have been canceled. So they're trying to look at students in different ways. So I guess my question to you is this a good thing? And is this going to stick? That's the next thing. Is it actually going to stick once kids get back to quote unquote normal?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I definitely don't have a great answer to that. I know that even pre-COVID, many schools, my own included, University of Michigan, had been looking at alternative ways to kind of assess students as far as their readiness for the college and their abilities. And I know some schools had done portfolio type approaches and other things. But the bottom line is I would be surprised if we moved completely away from college assessment, standardized tests. There's a lot of lobbyists that aren't going to want that to happen, that pay a lot of money to, you know, make sure that standardized tests are the part of the entrance. And I do know that it's hard to compare colleges when you don't have concrete metrics and numbers. So I think that will be the biggest hurdle is what are going to be the metrics that you are comparing in those guides that say, you know, this school is number one and this school is number five, because the schools, the ranking of the school also brings in students.
Great point. I think about like that kind of, yes, it would be nice if we could totally change everything, but just because of the pandemic, it doesn't necessarily mean you can flip a switch, right? It doesn't just change things. It can make it so you have to change the way you're doing things. But, you know, for example, this year we're going to have Thanksgiving with grandma and grandpa over Zoom. And in some ways it's easier, right? Like we don't have to cook for them and they don't have to drive 5 hours, but that doesn't mean that we're going to change it that way forever. And I mean, maybe that's not a good analogy, but yeah, your point is well taken in that, that there has to be a slow change to some of these things that for a reason, they don't just change overnight.
Yeah. I think that was a great analogy actually, because just like with classroom teaching, we're not going to all of a sudden see all the schools are going to be remote, but we may see more remote aspects than we saw before, or we may see more virtual schools within, you know, school districts than we saw before. But once kids can go back face-to-face safely and completely, they're going to go back face-to-face. for the most part, but there may be small incremental changes that occur as a result.
So along those lines, this is my last kind of question for you. This has to do with this idea that at some point we're going to be done with this, right? Which is going to be, I think is going to be a slow burn, right? It's not going to just switch one day, but when we kind of get back to quote unquote normal, what is something that you would like to see that we've been doing that'll stick?
One of the things that I would really like to see is more of the extending learning beyond the classroom with technology. I think that technology is so brilliant in being able to move from 6 degrees of separation to 1 degree of separation. I've seen teachers bringing in, you know, expert guest speakers in their Zoom classrooms. I've seen them doing parent-teacher conferences via Zoom to better connect with families. One family told me that they've never participated in the parent-teacher conferences until this year because of the Zoom option. So I think that kind of thing would be lovely to stay because we are able to make some connections through this these synchronous Zoom rooms that we just didn't think about before. So I would love to see that kind of thing stick around.
Yeah, I really like the way that families have felt closer, right? They feel like they're a part of the system instead of just dropping their kids off and leaving. And I do like that. And I think that there are things that have been well documented that technology does well and things that it does not do well. And I think that is one of those things that technology does so well is, you know, bring people together that could not normally get together and communicate. So that's wonderful. What's something you would like to see just go ahead and fade off into the distance after the pandemic's over?
Personally, I know you and I have talked about this, but like the high flex classrooms in my mind need to go. There's really, you know, no solid educational reason why those are effective. I understand the idea is that children can be remote and children can be in the classroom and you can be teaching to both of them. But if you ask almost any teacher that's trying to do that right now, it's just an awful situation to try to teach in. It's really a lose-lose all around for the children and the teachers. The teacher is being asked to multitask, which is something that doesn't really exist. So they're being asked to teach to two classes at one time. The children at home, many of whom may be vulnerable and really can't be in the classroom because of COVID, are just watching the teacher teach while they're watching all their friends being able to hang out together. And then the kids in the classroom don't get the full teacher's attention. And it's just an almost impossible task to ask teachers to do that. And it's very unfair. So I would like to see that approach go away.
Yeah, it's something that like in the middle of the pandemic, when there's zero options available, you know, right? It might be the best of the worst. But at the same time, I could definitely see that in the future where it's like, oh, you know, so-and-so can't make it to school because of whatever, they have head lice or they have this or whatever it is, and saying, oh, no problem, they'll just zoom in and watch you, right? Yeah, we don't want that to become the norm because it is so difficult. That really, it can't be overstated how hard it is to teach and multitask in a hybrid situation. So I'm with you on that one. I think that needs to be an emergency only approach.
You brought up a good point about that earlier, Eric, where you mentioned, you know, if you're homesick or ill, you know, there was an image on Twitter of a teacher teaching from like her hospital bed. She had COVID and she's teaching from the hospital bed, and that needs to go, right? You know, this idea that you can't just be sick and you can't just have wellness and rest. So if you're homesick, you shouldn't have to teach because there's Zoom. And if you're homesick as a student, you shouldn't have to sit there and try to learn when you have a fever or, you know, you're not feeling well. You know, the idea of it should be 24/7 learning and teaching no matter where you are, I think it's away from the wellness aspect.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that as teachers, we've definitely, and really this is not just a teacher thing, but because of technology, we feel like we're doing our jobs 24 hours a day, right? We can always check email, all those kind of things. This is just it taken to the extreme of like, oh, you're going on vacation to Florida? Well, don't forget, you're going to need to zoom in once a day, you know, that kind of thing, where you could see it being perverted a little bit, where it's not good for anybody. Like, you have to be able to live in the moment and you have to be able to take care of yourself. So yeah, totally agree. Totally agree. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Liz. I love talking about technology and just teaching in general with you. I always learn something, and I hope that everybody listening learned something as well. And again, Liz's book is, this is just the latest book, is Learning First, Technology Second, The Educator's Guide to Designing Authentic Lessons. And what are your socials, Liz? Do you have some social media stuff you'd like to share?
On Twitter, I am L Kolb. L-K-O-L-B. So that's a good way to connect with me. I tweet quite a bit, as Eric knows.
Thanks so much again for joining us, Liz.
Thanks for having me. It's always fun to talk to you.
Well, I'd like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Whitebook.com. And teachers, if you're looking for a whiteboard solution, like, I don't know, maybe you're teaching from home right now, you're teaching in your basement, or in your bedroom. If you're looking for whiteboards that you can stick to your wall, stick to the door, or any other type of whiteboard solution, you can get them at Whitebook. And Teachers Talking Tech listeners, you can get 30% off. Just go to whitebook.com/teachers talking tech. That's WIPEBOOK.com/teachers talking tech. Another way you can help the podcast is by leaving us a rate or review wherever you listen to podcasts. And I want to give a shout out to Anxa21 on Apple Podcasts. She left us a great review. It says, the most relevant podcast for all elementary school teachers. I look forward to their podcast as much as I look forward to my Lakeshore catalogs. Love it. Well, thank you very much for that positive review. We really, really appreciate it. All right. Well, thank you again for the listen. This has been Eric Robinson and Teachers Talking Tech. See ya.